questions. I think we have 12 folks, and we have 1 hour allocated to this. We're about 15 minutes behind schedule. So let's go with the first three. Danny DeFranco, Jeff Dawson, and Sam Ledgerwood. Welcome, gentlemen. Danny?
Good morning. I'll probably start out first, if that's okay. So, good morning, Sheriff Carpenter, Director Seuslin, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm here today. We're visiting about wolves. This is why Sam and Jeff and I are here today, and we're representing not only our members, but the rest of the livestock industry. It's been quite challenging the last 3-4 weeks, and we just wanted to be present here today to hear our story. I said it last month in front of you guys, and I'll say it again. I'll probably say it every time I'm sitting in front of you, that we are looking for solutions. We don't want to be hindering trying to solve problems, and I think it shows with us being here today. So moving forward, if there's anything we can do to support the commission, Director Seuslin, please reach out to us. We have producers that are very frustrated right now, and we'd like to see those people get some help. So I don't want to take up Jeff or Sam's time, so that's all I have for you today. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Dawson.
First of all, thank you for your time today. I appreciate that. As Danny spoke to, we're here to address the wolf issue. And this is, I'm representing not only myself and my family today, but I am a District 1 rep, which is Okanagan, Ferry, Stevens, and Pondre counties, which is where we're having most of our problems with the wolf issue. So I am responsible for our membership that are dealing with this, and I hear the same thing, and I don't know how to convey this to you, the stress, the emotional duress that these people are under that are in the ranching communities up there with a species, trying to manage around it and take the losses at the same time. I just want you to be aware of that. And like I said, if I could put it in a bowl for you so you could look at it, it might be easier, but I can't. It's reached a point where it overfilled, guys. Something needs to be done. You know, my family's worked with this department from day one on this wolf issue, trying to be proactive and do everything we could to minimize the losses. And you hit a point where in the last 30 days, we have zero trust left for the department in how it's handling the situation. The things that have came up in the last 30 days that we feel that broke the trust issue. It's not that we're still not committed to try and work through it, because we are. We don't have a choice. But I'm here to try and ask for you. And I was here a year ago, and I thought then the commission made a decision. We were talking about collaring and the data sharing. I think you even voted on it at that time to go forward. Let's improve this. Let's not go backwards. In my opinion, and I started out on this, putting this original plan together, we've rolled this thing back. We're 10 years back from where we were today. That's where the wolf situation is. And that's sad, because we haven't made progress on this. And like Danny said, we're committed. I'll sit down and roll up my sleeves and work with whoever it takes to get a solution that's a positive move forward on this, if that's what you're willing to do. I am. But it's not something I don't want to hear. We're going to form another subcommittee or a committee, and we're going to keep studying this. We don't have time to keep studying this. It has to be solved now, guys. That's what I'm asking for. I got some bullet points if I got enough time here to cover them, but that's your decision. I heard the beeper go off.
Any objection? Otherwise, I would ask Mr. Dawson to bring those points forward. And the other question I have while you're getting ready for that, are you going to be able to attend? I know you, the committee issue bothers you, but we have a new Wolf committee with some new people on it. Would you be able to consider attending that today during the lunch hour?
I would like to, yes.
Okay, all right. Go ahead with your bullets, if you would.
So some of the examples that I'm talking about is when we're talking about our coloring and data sharing, it's not working. We're right in the heat of it. We're having problems now, and we can't go 7 days and them range riders not be getting that information. That's a problem. And I, in the beginning when we started this process, it was weather-related, or maybe she crawled in the hole and you couldn't get the information. That's not the case, guys. Something else is wrong with this system. It's not working. One of the things that came up is you've got to have a range rider before this man can make the decision to go lethal on a pack of wolves that are depredating. My family wrote the book on range riding in the state of Washington. That's not the case. Don't hold that over the producer's head. This is what you've got to have as a requirement. I don't know where that ever came into the plan to be added. Range riding is effective, but only to a certain degree. All these tools will only work so long. They've got a time limit to them. And once we've turned the corner, it's hard to break. I'll use a dog as an example. We get a dog that's killing chickens. If we don't stop him right away, it continues. That dog reproduces another batch. They continue to kill. Pretty soon, this is where the mess is coming from. We've allowed these packs to breed these problems into them rather than address them up front. I'm not here to bash or criticize anybody in this room. It's things that I can see, and we've got to improve, and we don't have a lot of time to do that improvement now. And like I said, it goes back to the stress that we're under now dealing with this. I cannot put enough emphasis on that, what these families are going through. I guess, and I'll close it up. I would like to attend your committee meeting this afternoon. Close it up. I'm going to ask a couple questions here for you to think about. I don't want the answer. I don't want you to answer it in this room, but I want you to think about it on your drive home today. Do you love your family, and to what extent are you going to go to protect your family? And I'll close it with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dawson. Commissioner Thorburn?
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. I have been hearing Mr. Dawson for several years now. He has been with this since the very, very beginning. And we recently were together on a legislative tour up in the Northeast, and he was presenting what he's telling us today. And what I hear from him is he's our partner in this. As much information as he can get about wolves in his area is going to help him with his livelihood, with his family. He is going to use that as a partner with us to do the best for protecting wolves, but also protecting his family and his livelihood, and that's what we need to get taken care of. Our cattlemen in the Northeast are our partners, and I hear from them that, you know, they don't want dead wolves either, but they do have their livelihood and their families and their responsibility to protect it. And that's what we, that's what I hear you saying. So I just want to reiterate it.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. Commissioner Kehoe?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Dawson. Commissioner Holtzmiller did give me a heads up that you would be coming today, and appreciate you driving all the way over here. And also, let me too thank you for your leadership on this issue. And what I'm hearing from you is that you know, you're feeling some stress. You want to still keep on in that role, and I'm sure everybody here on the table urges you to keep doing that. So I just have a question for you. You know, we've heard a lot about the data sharing issue. I know this was a Commissioner Holtzmiller was very vocal about the need to do that and improve on that. So I think it would help me to understand exactly how you specifically, and if you can talk about others, how you use the data and what you do with the data. I mean, for example, do you move your cattle? Do you target your range riding? How do you use the data? And then if you could say, also explain without how it negatively impacts you if you don't get that data in a timely fashion.
Thank you. That the importance of this data is, let's back up where the real importance is as came. At one time it was used, well, you only need it during the grazing season. We're past that now. We need it 12 months of the year because we have wolves that we're dealing with 12 months of the year. The grazing season, just because they're not on pasture, they're home on the ranch eating hay, we got wolves there too. That's why it's so important to know, okay, do we have a problem going on? What do we got to do to safety this situation up a little bit? When a range rider gets up in the morning, if they haven't been up all night already, and they get them downloads of that collar information, it's not to go hunt down the wolf and find out what the wolf was doing. Most of the time they got an idea where the cattle are the previous night. So that's their concern, where them cattle are. And if you've got collar locations that are in or amongst where you knew them cattle were, then that's the first spot you're going to go to see if you've had a problem. And it is used to some of these mortalities. You wouldn't find them without it. It's very important that way. You can't allow them to get by with just a clean bill of health that, oh, them calves didn't show up this fall. Wonder what happened to them. It's important. There's a responsibility that comes back as managers of the wildlife on this deal. We feel at times it's the department that's trying to manage us and how we manage our ranch, and that's not right. Am I answering your question?
Yes, you are.
The importance of this, we've gone beyond short-term blackout period. We're not the people out there hunting them. Yeah, you're going to always have the issue of a poached wolf. That will continue on forever, but that's not going to eliminate the population. The population still is growing with the losses that were taken on the wolf population. We see an upward trend in this. These blackout periods, that isn't necessary for the rancher. Most of us know where the den sites are and where the wolf sites are without ever having that collar information. We do our best to avoid it. Doing our best is, we've got to have some help from the other side here now, because we're in a corner where we can't do anything more.
Commissioner Linville.
Thank you for being here today, Mr. Dawson. From my time on the Wolf Advisor Group, I just want to share that Mr. Dawson's family has, as we like to say, shook the hinges off the toolbox for wolf management. They have followed up and done what they said they were going to do, and they've been proactive from day one. And so my question to you, Mr. Dawson, is without needing to use names or, you know, get too terribly specific, other than the data sharing, what type of situations has made your family lose trust in the department? Can you tell us what specifically we need to be watching the department, you know, and working together with the department so that you feel respected and that they're doing their part?
Absolutely. I'll tell you, I will not use names, but the final straw was these sound recording devices that were put out on one of our forest permits.
And can you tell us a little bit about that?
That was the final straw in it. We knew we were having wolf problems. They did the investigations on them and couldn't prove anything. That's understandable. At least we did what was to be done. But then to learn about these devices that have been deployed out there as our new way of trying to get a wolf count by determining how many different howls or who's howling. And these things are recording everything they hear. You can hear the raindrops or the birds in the background. Everything. That's an invasion of privacy in my mind. And I don't need... Where our range rider's at with her camper, I don't need one that's 300 yards away from it picking up when I know the things are capable of 500 yards of picking up sounds. Like I say, it's an invasion of privacy.
If I may, from my perspective, Commissioner Thorburn chairs the Fish Committee, chairs the Wolf Committee with three other individuals, one of which is not here, Vice Chair Baker. And she's real serious and real dedicated, I can tell from her comments in the past few months, as are the other members of that committee. If you folks, if you have some ideas that you could bring forward during this committee meeting over the noon hour, I think that would really be helpful for those of us that get it and hear about it, but we're not on the ground and seeing it like you folks do. It's a little bit hard to envision some to a total degree of what we're dealing with. So some criticism's fine, but some positive ideas on how to move forward and fix this is something of real interest to me. So. Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Ledgerwood, did you have anything else to say, Mr. Dawson?
Well, I could talk all day, but...
Thank you.
Mr. Ledgerwood, please.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioners, for hearing us, and especially for letting Jeff have some time to explain to you the severity of the circumstances up there. I hope you heard the tone in his voice. We heard it at our last board meeting, and it really struck me. It's not Jeff. It's not the person that's been coming to their board meetings. It's not the person that you've been hearing at this commission. It's really affecting his family, his living, and that's his attitude. And I hope you get the severity of that. I would urge the commission to support the director in what he needs to do in moving forward to help curb this situation. You know, he needs your support in order to do what he's got to do. It's not going to be nice. There is people on the other side. We're aware of that. We are affected in the southeast, too, so it's not only the northeast. Recently, this last week, grazing on the 4-0 was terminated for wolf reasons, not for feed resource reasons. So that's affecting that. Those cows leave. Just so happens I'm the neighbor and to that permit. So where are they going to go to get their beef now? So we're being affected by the blackout, by the lack of data. We moved cows the other day. There was a glitch in the system. I don't know why. My daughter, who Molly knows well, sits on the WAG, moved cows the other day. Data comes back online. We put the cows right where the wolf was. Hadn't been there before. The data never showed it was there before. So we're back checking, making sure everything's kosher. But that's because of lack of data. I don't know if it's anybody's fault. We did that not on purpose. He had not had been in that area before. Again, just to reiterate what Jeff has said, financially, mentally, and physically, these families are strapped. They need help. They need something positive. It's affecting their, as Jeff said the other day in talking to me, kitchen table. You just can't have a normal, how was your day? You know, it's affecting their emotions. There's several things that affect it financially. The scattered cattle, we're getting the neighbor's cattle off the ground around 4-0 area, scattered up into our permit. My crew has to take time to gather them. He worked with him and get them back. You know, it's not just the dead animals is what I'm trying to say. It's the scattered cattle, the fuel, the time, the open cows. It just continues to hurt. So appreciate anything you guys can do to support the director and do what he has to do to curb these situations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ledgewood. Are you going to be able to join the... Okay, thank you. I think Commissioner McKeyson can have a comment here.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thanks to you gentlemen for driving all the way over here. And I hope you can attend the Wolf Committee meeting, which is open and to the folks and intended to be transparent for all these. My question has to do with the timing of the release information. And Mr. Dawson spoke of about a year ago when I thought the decision was that the information should be available as soon as possible so that folks could use it to avoid areas of conflict, and if there was misuse of the information, there'd be some sort of severe penalty associated with that. So my question is the rollover of the timing as soon as possible. What is the amount of time between when the information is collated and provided to the producers as it stands now?
Molly can probably answer that better than anybody.
So I hate to say this, but it depends. It depends every time. I don't know how far into this you want to get. Maybe we should save this for the committee meeting. Might be better. There's a big answer around this, and it's not the same every time.
Well, let me just get a feel for it, because as I left the meeting a year ago, I thought it was going to be a fairly quick turnaround. There was phrasing of the blue blob, and there was a lot of issues to be dealt with. But
so sometimes it's instantaneous,
okay,
and sometimes it's 2 weeks out. And sometimes it doesn't happen at all because they're in a blackout. Is that answer enough for now?
Good enough for now.
Okay.
If I may, the blackout period is concerning.
Yeah.
To all of us, because as Jeff stated, we're not out here hunting wolves. We're trying to manage our cattle. Just for instance, my permit, I go on the forest on the 10th of June. The blackout period doesn't end till 15th of July. Really? How am I supposed to manage around wolves when, you know, I guess we're hopefully relying on good conflict specialists, which we have in our area, and I think Jeff has tried to work with the ones in his area too to tell us where the wolves are, but that's another step that we don't need. If we could somehow get affected people to not have a blackout period, would be a help. Anyway.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for coming over. I look forward to hearing more after the committee meeting.
Thank you.
Next three, David Lynn, Greg King, and Eileen Levy.
laser.
No. Are you here to talk about wolves?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Good morning, Commissioners and Director Suswind. My name is David Lynn. I'm here from Ocean Shores representing myself. I'm subscribed to the department's email notification list, and I check my email and see a message from WDFW Wildlife Program with the subject, new update on Washington wolves. My heart skips a beat. All too often it will say that there's been a confirmed wolf depredation or the wolves are going to be killed by the Our endangered wolves are caught between hostile states to the east, tribes with unlimited year-round killing, in-state poachers, and state-sanctioned killing. Over the past several years, we've been told that wolf recovery in our state was a success story because the population was increasing at 30% or so per year. But that was simply a reflection of the fact that the count started from a very low base. Over the past year, the department's count showed a population increase of only 4 individuals. That's just 3.3%. Identified depredations have begun early this year, and I fear this spells serious problems for our wolves as the season progresses. The received wisdom within the department is that of incremental killing, then an evaluation period to see if the depredations have stopped. If they have not, then the killing continues. This relies on the assumption that somehow wolves will learn that if they kill a cow, they themselves will be killed. But since these two events are separated in time and in space, it is unlikely that they make that connection. These animals live in the moment and do not understand the rules that we have imposed upon them. We need to focus more on changing human behavior and how we deal with this, since we are the ones that create those rules. In a recent OPT PAC update, the department's website, Director Suswind quoted as saying, "The department is working very hard to try to change the PAC's behavior, while working also with the diversity of stakeholders on how to prevent this cycle from repeating, but it does not seem to be working. Remember the destruction of the Profanity Peak Pack in 2016 in the same location that the OPT Pack now occupies. Kill them all and others will simply take their place because this is ideal wolf territory and only marginal cattle grazing land." In discussing the recent depredations on the department's website, it was noted that the, quote, the exact dates calves were found injured could not be determined from the evidence present, but injuries on 2 of the calves were estimated to be 4 to 5 days old, and injuries on the 3rd calf were at least a week old. That it takes this long to find an injured calf highlights just how unsuitable this terrain is for grazing. On March 12th of this year, Dan Ash, former head of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, testified before a U.S. House of Representatives Natural Resources Subcommittee. He was asked whether he thought that wolves had recovered, and he responded that based upon information from the agency scientists that they were recovered. But then he added that he had been sobered by a disturbing trend in state-based management in certain western states, which seemed to be returning to a philosophy of treating wolves as vermin. This is not the goal of recovery. He also noted that of 5,000 species of mammals on the planet, humans comprise 36%, domesticated animals 60%, and wild animals only 4%. We need to stop and think about what we are doing. Thank you for your time.
We're going to talk about wolves. I'm talking about fish. So you go ahead.
We need a break. You do it.
Okay.
Greg, we're in sequence, so it's you.
Okay. My name is Greg King, Vice President of Friends of Cowlitz, also WDFW Cowlitz Advisory Group, and my new title is Lewis County Water Alliance 2. Good morning, Commissioner Carpenter, Commission, welcome aboard, Commissioner Linville, Commissioner Anderson. I kind of had a speech all lined out, but after hearing all this wolf stuff, I'm gonna kind of go with our problem, our fish problem, with our sea lion pinniped problem. I had a senator this last summer, over the summer, asked me, we were talking about pinnipeds, and I says, well, what did the department tell you? And they said, well, we need to do another study. I says, what? We don't need to do a study on pinnipeds. We know enough. And Oregon has shown that passage of steelhead, late winter run steelhead at Willamette Falls has improved since they've taken out some sea lions. I think they took 13 out. The callus has been loaded with them. I don't know if they've moved in there. They moved smelt run, all that. We need to look at taking care of those in Washington State and Puget Sound. We need to do something in Puget Sound. Larry, you know that. Ron Gardner knows that. And I just want to let the new commissioners know that we've been doing this wild fish thing since 1984 on the Columbia River. We spent $18 billion in the Columbia River on recovery, and we have nothing to show for it. can't show me, if you guys can show me one place that we've had recovery with just with wild fish, I'll leave. It's always been hatchery production. Summer Chinooks have been supplementation. The Johnson Creek, Snake River runs it that Don McIsaac talks about. Conservation hatcheries. We need to look more at producing fish out of the Columbia River. I know the governor has granted us 55 million more Chinooks be planted in both the Sound, and but we need to get this thing going, you know. And I know you guys, we didn't do too good in the budget, but I'll talk later on the budget. You know, I got to go fishing with my daughter. She's 16 years old, and I don't know how long I'll be able to fish with her, you know, anymore. But we've got to go to Buoy 10 and out in the ocean, and it was a nice day yesterday. We caught some fish. Everybody's happy. You know, what a beautiful resource we have down there on the coast, you know, and those guys down on the coast and those commercial fishing communities and stuff, and just that whole thing is the lifeblood of this state, this side of the state. And you know, the cattlemen on the other side of the state, you know. One of them asked me, how can we work together? And I thought, that's great, you're reaching out to me. And that's the kind of stuff we need. We need all of us working together, you know, commercial tribes and sports. You've heard me say that I don't know how many times when I come in front of the commission, you know. I'm here to work with the commission and the department. You guys know that. We just need to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Ms. LaVie?
Good morning. My name is Eileen LaVie. I'm a rancher from Klickitat and Clark Counties. I just want to share with you a little bit of personal perspective about how our operation works. It's not exactly the same as it is, obviously, on the east side of the mountains, but nevertheless, we do have a lot of predators. We have bear, we have cougar, we have bobcat, we have coyotes. You name it, we've got it. We even have the occasional traveling man, which is what my mother always used to call the wolves. Our operation is strictly income-based in that the sole income derived to our ranching and farming operations are from that operation only. We have no outside income source. So all of our attention, time, manpower associated with that operation is devoted to the cattle that we operate. Whatever the livestock operation is that we're operating with at any given time is based on market. Sometimes it's more cattle, sometimes it's more veal, sometimes it's sheep, sometimes it's hogs, sometimes it's all of the above. When we do put, and we do have an operation that allows us enough acreage to put our cattle out in the spring and summer on what I call woodland. We have a lot of fur and so forth, but we put our cattle out for grazing. And when we do, we're out there with them. If they're out there over days, we're with them. If we're not with them, we hire help that is with them, with dogs, etc. Usually with sheep, we have dogs. But we never put our animals out without human supervision. We know that the predators will be there. They follow the animals where the water source is. And one thing that you might want to know, we never put cattle out when the cow has just freshened. And if the calf is under 600 pounds minimum, they don't go out to graze. As I've shared with your colleague, Donnie Mortarello, when a cow is lactating, the predators can smell that sugar a mile away, and they will be there. That's what lactating is. So the animals do not go out with small calves, or if they're not freshened yet, but they will be calving. So that's just a word to the wise. I'm very concerned, probably more so about this than the other. If there is an anticipation that the department is anticipating or planning on a move of wolves to the western side of the mountains, the beef cattle and livestock and the grazing land is nothing to what it will be compared to if the wolves get into the dairy land. You haven't seen anything until you've seen a cow running with an udder the size of a beer keg running away from a predator. And if you think you have people that are mad at you on the east side of the mountains, Wait till they get to the west side and they get into the dairy lands. So just keep that in mind. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, folks. Appreciate your comments. Douglas St. Denis, Rob, I don't know how to pronounce your last name, Rob.
Light table.
Okay. And Officer Tuggle.
Sergeant to you.
Sergeant to you. I got it. Douglas, thank you.
Thank you for your time. My name is Doug St. Denis, and I'm the president of the Washington chapter of Northwest Guides and Anglers. I'd like to speak to the guide logbook issue, which you'll discuss later this morning. The Washington chapter of Northwest Guides and Anglers Association see the potential value, and we understand why logbooks are needed. We've been actively involved in this issue since May of 2018. In fact, it was this issue that created our chapter. We understand, or we have read, and we understand the three options Mr. Burley, Mr. Donnelly, and Captain Chadwick will present today during that time. That said, the Washington chapter of Northwest Guides and Anglers Association respectfully asked the commission to choose option C. Based on feedback from our membership, option A is not acceptable. We understand the main difference between option B and option C is the requirement of guides reporting activity on days they are not guiding, which I'd like to address. There are times throughout the year that a guide will fish with their family and actual friends, real friends, not the made-up ones. There's no exchange of money, and these are not guided trips. There are also semi-pro and pro bass anglers in our state, and they are also licensed guides. They fish tournaments, and they fish personally in preparation for these tournaments. This section would require they complete a logbook each time they fish. In speaking with several Bass Pro anglers who hold a game fish license, they might fish 10 or 15 clients a year, while in preparation for tournaments, they fish 90% more without clients. If the purpose of guide logbooks is to better understand guiding activity in our state and the economic and conservation impacts, option C will gather that necessary data. If guides are reporting on non-guiding days, that information is going to skew the data that we're trying to collect and use for you and for us. As I stated, we see potential value of the logbooks if the information is used appropriately. However, we want to see a program that's beneficial and not punitive for 99% of the guides that do everything correctly. Lastly, Northwest Guides and Anglers Washington chapter recommends a pilot program to ensure the stability of the online reporting tool and work out the bugs that may exist in the reporting program. There are penalties associated with noncompliance. Nobody wants to see penalties for anybody if the problem was with the system rather than true malfeasance. I appreciate your time, your attention, and your consideration.
Thank you. Commissioner McIsaac, and then...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the testimony today. It's a little bit awkward here in getting public comment now on a matter of a decision later for new things that were introduced in Port Angeles. So thank you for coming up at this time. And not having heard the staff presentation yet, and not having heard their perspective on this matter of reporting for private trips, what I see in the briefing materials is reference to the state of Alaska. And it seems to say something along the lines of it helps for enforcement of reporting on true guided trips if the requirement is that a guide report on all their trips, with their, even if they're with their family or personal trips. So I wondered if again, it's awkward because we haven't heard the staff presentation on this, but I wondered if you would react to the argument that for enforcement purposes, this is an advisable way to go.
Yes, sir. I'd be more than happy to answer your question. January 2nd, 2020, I'll retire as a Snohomish County deputy. 25 years of service. I've been on the road. I've done enforcement. I've worked with fish and game enforcement. I've enforced fish and game laws. These guys that work these areas, they know who's who. They know what they're doing. I even have enforcement officials call me when I'm out doing my guiding. Hey, what's going on with that boat over there? What's going on with these guys on the bank? We talk. These enforcement officers, they know how to do their job. But if we're trying to collect data to understand the economic impact and conservation for guiding, then if I take my family out on the Snohomish River once a year, that information is skewing the data. So do we really want data? Do we want to use it to make things better and understand guiding activity? Then let's get the right data. Does that answer your question, sir?
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have a Commissioner Graybill?
Yeah, I'm interested in hearing the presentation and talking to staff about this particular issue. And we visited since the beginning when you formed your group, and I appreciate the effort that you've put into finally getting the Guide State Association put together so that we have a point of contact with the department. I'm a good example of a non-guided seat. I have the benefit, I know a lot of guides in my region and even over here, and they've been very generous. I gather information for and disseminate information on fishing in Central Washington, and if they've got an open seat, they let me know. And a lot of times I don't even touch a rod, but I'm on the boat, and so how you deal with that is an interesting problem that we need to address, and I think the staff's aware of that. And I'll be interested in hearing how they're going to deal with that. But I understand. I mean, there's traditionally every, except for this year, your last couple of years, July 1st, I spend the day with Shane Magnuson. You know, I'm part of his family, and we go out every opening day of salmon season, you know, and it's just a fun day for everybody. And I could name a series of guides that have helped me provide their boats as platforms for shooting video or doing what I do. So there are many instances like that. So we need to sort that out, address it.
But may I address that, Mr. Grable?
Sure.
That actually is addressed because there is a difference. If I bring on pay, I grab you for, you're paying, you're not. That's a guided trip. The only difference is you're being comped. And that's addressed in all of the options.
Okay.
So with option C, we're specifically, I'm not talking about I've got one person who's paying and three friends. That's a guided trip. I'm talking about true non-guided trips. I don't have a personal boat I can go put my family in. It's got guide stickers on it. But I may take them. Or my family may come up from Texas. That's the difference. So that is addressed, and I'm sure that the staff today will explain that.
That's what I'm looking forward to, because I'm very much aware of the instances when there's a non-paying customer aboard.
Yes, sir.
Or, as Shane calls me, a rod holder with a pulse.
Commissioner Linville.
First off, thank you so much for your 25 years of service.
Thank you, ma'am.
As a deputy. Thankless job, so I appreciate you for that. Please excuse, I'm a landlubber, so I'm just trying to wrap my brain around a whole bunch of new issues. I understand the issue. Is there any concern with keeping harvest data as a private citizen? Is that part of the issue, that guides, when they're hunting on their private time, don't want harvest data recorded? I'm just trying to understand.
No, we just believe that if I go out, there are some guides, I don't know how they do it. I mean, you're trying to make some money, pay the bills. But there are guys that'll go out and fish 2-3 days with a buddy. And then they'll have a guided trip on Friday or Saturday, right? Well, you ask them, what are you doing? well, we just got to get out and fish. Well, you're burning money, right? Think about it. We're trying to collect data to help manage our resources and understand the economic impact in Washington State about guiding activity. If that guy now has to report those 3 or 4 days that him and his buddy went out and fished because he's in a licensed guide boat, that's going to skew your data. It's not going to help you, and it's not going to help us. Certainly not going to help the director and his fish program team.
So there's not harvest data taken by private citizens that are just out fishing in their non-guide boats then?
Correct. No, this is just for guiding.
Okay, thank
you. Just for guiding.
Can I just say that there are other ways of collecting that
information?
Okay.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just not clear on the skewing of the data part of this. So if the report says this was a private trip and I went out with my three buddies, I'll take you for your word that the requirement is you have to say who those individuals were on the private trip. But it goes down as a private trip. The data for guided trips is used to achieve the purposes of the policy. How big is the guiding industry in the state? How many days does a guided trip occur? When the guided trip occurs, this, that, and the other thing. If the data is segregated as to private and guiding, I don't see how it skews the data. So could you speak to how, what you mean by skewing the data?
Well, if we're trying to understand the economic impact of guiding, so let's say, for instance, how much money is the Yakima region make because people go there to go fly fishing, right? On guided trips. Well, if we're also requiring that fly guide to report on days that he's not guiding, it's not showing us the economic impact. That's going to skew the data. It's not going to be accurate. That's my point. Now, that said, again, this is information we garner from our membership. Their concerns. I probably fish twice a year personally. So, honestly, it's not going to impact me personally, but it will impact other people. And we want true data. We want to work with the commission and the department so we can have better fisheries, so we can wrap our heads around this. We want to work with you. We don't want to do this. It doesn't get us anywhere. So let's get good data. And honestly, when you see the presentation, you're going to see the difference. The only difference between option B and option C is that option C does not require a guide complete the logbook on a day that is truly not a guided trip. There's no money exchanged.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Rob?
Good morning, Chair Carpenter, members of the Commission, Director Suswind. Rob Crable, Northwest Representative with Defenders of Wildlife. I'm mostly here to provide an update on some of the work that we've been doing with the department on grizzly bears. But before I jump into that, just wanted to note our Northwest Director, Quinn Reed, is hoping to be at the Wolf Committee meeting later this afternoon. So looking forward to discussing those issues more then. And then also just wanted to mention, Commissioner Graybill, I was really happy to hear your report on the Northern Pike efforts. And the only thing I would just add to that is to remind you and others that Northern Pike aren't the only invasive piscivorous fish that needs to be addressed for salmon, and the recent legislation that came out to address orca recovery liberalized bag limits for other fish like catfish, bass, and walleye that are invasive species. And I think it would be fantastic if anglers could do a catfish fry to save orcas and fish out some of these populations. So I hope that the department does continue to encourage anglers to help with salmon and orca conservation by getting rid of these invasives. On grizzly bears, I imagine several of you saw the big news that the North Cascades EIS for grizzly bear restoration restoration in the North Cascades has reopened for another 90 days of public comment. It's something that Defenders is very excited to see that the process is continuing to move forward. And as this process moves forward in the political realm, we've been working on the ground with partners, including the department, to prepare communities to live alongside these large bears should they come back to the ecosystem. In May, we hosted a workshop in the North Cascades Institute with the support, with the participation of WDFW staff to talk about things like bear awareness, the bear spray trainings that we do with the department, bear-resistant trash cans, and then we also did a demonstration of how to install an electric fence around any attractions that folks have in their backyards. We had over 50 people from local government elected officials to agency staff from both state, tribal, and federal agencies, and it was a really good day. From that, we did hear a lot of concerns about current state law when it comes to feeding wildlife. Right now, current state law only deals with the feeding and attracting of carnivores, but if you're putting corn out on your field to attract turkeys or deer, bears are also going to come in there, not to mention the predators who will be attracted by all the other animals that are coming in. We also heard a lot of concerns about how trash is a big problem in bear country, especially in the urban-rural interface there, and that's another thing that we're going to be working on to provide more bear-resistant trash cans to communities. We were able to provide 30 cans to the communities of Diablo and New Halem so that they don't have the problems with bears that they're currently dealing with black bears. But I think that there's some other legislative fixes that we're going to be pursuing and would like to work with the department on finding some of those solutions. And then the only other thing that I'll say is just, Commissioner Thornburg, we will be in your neck of the woods in a couple of weeks doing some more bear spray trainings with backcountry hunters and anglers and another event at RAI, and would love to have you there to join us to learn about bear awareness and play around with some bear spray.
Yeah, let me know. Great. Thank you, Rob. Jim Tuggle.
Thank you, Commissioner. Pleasure to be here this morning. Jim Tuggle, Tumwater, Washington. Fascinating morning already. I've hunted in Klickitat, Okanagan, and Southeast Washington. I was a fishing guide. A lot of things to say. I have a situation I want you to fix, please. And there's some complications to it. I'm currently president of the Friends of the Deschutes, a small organization talking about our Deschutes River. 2 years ago, we had about 40,000 Chinook, that's a huge number for Puget Sound, returned to the Deschutes. And we let, I think, 900 males above the trap to go up into the river. It was open to salmon fishing. Last year, we had a lesser number of fish, and I didn't look up the number, but it might have been 8 or 10,000 Chinook salmon. We're not allowing salmon to go up and spawn in the Deschutes naturally anymore, and we did for years and years before that, and we had natural production, and we had nutrient enhancement. The coho run to the Deschutes is in serious, serious trouble. And I think that if we let a salmon go up, Chinook salmon go up and spawn naturally, it would enhance our coho productivity, as well as maintaining this ecosystem that was established over like 70 years of fish going up and dying and spawning. There have been grants given to different organizations amounting in the tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars to restore salmon habitat in Wyra 13. For God's sakes, we're not even going to allow salmon to go up and spawn. I made the calls this year. The plan so far this year is not to let Chinook salmon go up and spawn. And those fish naturally produced up there are free. They don't cost our citizens anything. I think the orcas would enjoy eating a few of those, no matter how good the numbers and enhancement. That's variable. And I asked one of the decision makers, what would happen if we had a healthy return of wild fish, or what would happen if we put those naturally spawning fish out into Puget Sound? They don't know. They don't have a number. But it would increase the encounter rate. The wild fish out of the chutes would increase the encounter rate of non-marked fish. And I said, how much? We don't know. but we know it would increase the encounter rate. There's free fish available for the Puget Sound ecosystem, the minor league Deschutes system, and for our orcas, which are in trouble. I'd just like to see a policy. The Deschutes River plan calls for a minimum of 1,500 Chinook salmon put above the falls. We do have a new capture facility that's part of the overall plan. Hopefully we'll have a new hatchery built on the Deschutes as people see the importance of hatchery salmon coming up, and there's some new science with hatchery and wild. Please do what you can to get that situation turned around. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tuggle. Commissioner Lindvall.
Again, I apologize for my ignorance on the topic. Can you describe what is required physically to take the salmon from below and release them?
We have a brand new capture facility by the old Tumwater Brewery in Deschutes Falls Park. We just rebuilt it. It's state-of-the-art capture facility where the salmon go up a ladder to a trap, and then we kill them all and provide cat food resources for somebody. That's basically what's going on now. It's just a matter of opening a chute, and up they go. There's no trucking. There's very little handling. Now, this also, the Deschutes, is used for an egg bank for other hatcheries, which is another problematic situation on disease transfer and whatnot. All you got to do is release them, and up they go. There's about 40 miles of good spawning area. It's not perfect, but it's good because it's been successful in the past.
Yeah. The director?
Yeah. Could I follow up?
Go ahead.
So then, does anything need to be done for out-migrating smolt?
No.
They can make it out?
Yeah.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, I don't really have a question for Mr. Tuggle. Sergeant Tuggle, thanks for coming.
Or Tug, yeah, it works.
And I guess I know we've talked about the commission taking a field trip to go tour the facility, and I don't know where that's at. I think we should try to fit that in our schedule permitting. And I know we're going to be talking about scheduling later today, but I think it would be good to go. And Mr. Tuggle, I'm sure you would be invited to such an occasion, and appreciate your efforts and your volunteering on this important project.
Thank you. If I might add, one of us on Tumwater Parks Board, we've got public owned property for the first mile or so of the Deschutes. And years ago, I, as well as others, used to give people the guided tour of salmon spawning naturally. And we had a big event at the Tumwater Falls Park where the Squaxins provided us salmon at a low price, and we had a big salmon bake and everything. There's so much potential for this, but there's these little glitches that are holding us back.
Commissioner McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you state what your understanding is for the reason why natural spawning isn't allowed up there anymore? Offer a perspective on that.
Wild fish out migrating?
No. Why it is that the department's policy changed?
No, against... I can't.
Okay.
I'd ask. The who?
Director, I'd like to ask, do we have someone on staff that's here today that could give us a briefing on this at the Fish Committee meeting at lunch for 10-15 minutes? I don't want to wait until we go to Winthrop and have a bunch of staff have to travel to Winthrop, and then our following meetings around Thanksgiving sometime. Is there anybody on board that could give us a download today on where the status is, opportunity might be?
Yeah, I think we can get someone there. I'm not sure that person's in the audience right now, but we'll get somebody there today.
Thank you very much. Anything else?
Where's your Fish Committee meeting, Larry?
I'm sorry?
Where's the Fish Committee?
The room right on the other side of the wall here, the whatever, 175, I think it is.
Or, yeah. See you there. Thank you.
You bet, Jim. It's just this side of the cafeteria. You'll remember that. Last two folks, please. Tom Davis and Robert Sudar. Good morning, gentlemen. Tom, you're up.
Well, good morning, commissioners. It's great to be here this morning.
Two new commissioners, Mr. Anderson. I don't know you. Look forward to working with you in the future. And Molly, I'll tell you, it's a win for the commission. It's a loss for the WAG. I've had the honor of serving with Molly for the last few years, and she is tenacious, and she will get a lot done. That's all I'm going to say. So I'm Tom Davis with the Washington Farm Bureau, here this morning to talk to you about wolves and just really the unprecedented actions, directions, impacts that have happened this summer to our ranchers. And there's already been a fair amount of discussion about that. But unprecedented numbers of losses of cows, the depredations, and I guess it just, if this is what recovery looks like, it's going to be a greater challenge than I think that many of us thought it might be. And hopefully this is just an unusual situation. But whatever it is, and as you heard in the voices of the ranchers that spoke to you this morning, it is increasing the stress load that these ranchers are feeling and have always dealt with, but now it's at a higher level. And these are multi-generation ranchers that you heard from this morning. Great families who are in it for the long haul and are being affected in ways that they have not been affected before, and they are trying to do everything right. So I'm appreciative that they were able to come and that they'll be with you during the subcommittee meeting. But the bottom line is ranchers are not interested in raising cows to feed wolves. So the compensation, while it may be helpful to some, it's not what they're after. They want to be able to maintain their livelihood and be successful. A couple of concerns to share with you. The issue on range riders and the fact that that's become a necessity rather than an option on non-lethals is a change that's happened this year. It'd be helpful, I think, to have a more robust conversation as to why that is, because there's confusion on the landscape about that. And there's a trust issue with range riders that I think would be helpful for you to know me, and some of you already are aware of that. But there are some trust issues of bringing somebody, a contracted range rider, onto your operation that you don't know, nor do you necessarily control how they operate. That runs against the grain of everything that an independent rancher is about. And there's also been cases where a range rider was not necessarily working well with the landowner, but that had a camera with them and was taking pictures of what they thought were violations of the grazing lease agreement. Imagine that would raise some trust issues with the rancher. The last thing I wanted to share with you, just heard this the last couple of days, some mysterious cow deaths over in eastern Washington. They believe that the cows were shot. And so they're up there. That has not yet been confirmed, but they weren't depredated upon. Doesn't appear it was a lightning strike. And we think there may be six cows, and they happen to belong to an operator that is engaged, involved with the OPT pack. So we're hoping it's not payback. We're hoping that they weren't shot. But I just wanted to raise that for you because that would just amp up the stress levels that much more if indeed somebody's out there now shooting cows on grazing allotments. So thank you again for the opportunity to address you this morning. Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. Mr. Thorburn?
I just want to add one point that hasn't come up in any of the testimony from the cattlemen, but certainly was a topic on the legislative tour. On impact, we're talking about sort of human stress levels, but there are also animal stress levels that were described with weight loss and reproduction. And it is definitely an issue. It impacts livelihood. It just is another piece of trying to survive in wolf country with this particular occupation that we need to take into consideration. And one other point on the trust issue around the range riders. This is an area that actually came up in the audit. One of the things that the department is required to do, especially when they're involved in reimbursing the range riders, is to have a really clear record of what the range riders are doing. You know, that relates to our responsibility in managing the money. So, you know, we're required to collect all this information, and I'm sure that, you know, with these issues that we're having around trust, that that is a challenge for the producers. And but it has to do with a whole other area of responsibility on the part of the department. So,
thank you for bringing that issue up. Yeah. That is an important one as well, as is the data sharing, and I failed to mention that, the frustrations about that you already heard this morning.
Thank you. Robert Sudar.
Good morning, commissioners and directors. Robert Sudar from Longview, commercial advisor and for the Columbia River, and mostly these days a small marketer. I wanted to talk a little. I've talked to you a lot over the years, you know that, about how much the Columbia River policy hurts our businesses on the river. But there was a new issue last year that came up with the orca story in Puget Sound. It created a lot of press, a lot of different activities. People outside of our region hear about it, talk about it. And one of the things that I ran into at the very end of our short commercial season last August is that there was a restaurateur in Seattle that refused to sell Chinook anymore in her restaurant in order to save them for the orcas. One of the grocery chains that I had sold to for 35 years told me that they couldn't buy from me anymore. They're only going to buy fish out of Alaska. And I mean, that was just like absolutely the wrong thing to say. And I did get a meeting with them in the fall to discuss why that was a bad decision, or at least not an accurate decision biologically. And I've been working with them over the winter, and I finally got a little bit of encouragement last week. They've hired an environmental group, National Fisheries Conservation Center, which is part of a group started by a branch of a group started by Dr. Lee Alvord at UW Fisheries, famous biologist from in the region. And they've been tasked with looking at fisheries in Washington that are, you might say, orca safe. How do our fisheries throughout the state rate in terms of competing with orcas for food? And that was encouraging for me, because the point I've been making for a long time is that our fishery on the Columbia is an orca-safe fishery, because the orcas don't come into the Columbia. First management scheme on the Columbia is for ESA-protected fish. Secondly, it's adequate spawning of all runs. And thirdly, we look at harvest. And so this is a great opportunity for us, I hope, to get some good publicity and to be recognized as a not only an effective fishery that fits within all of the management guidelines. We have a great record, as most of you know, about even though we're a gillnet fishery, we use a lot of techniques to avoid unnecessary ESA impacts. We stay within all of our limitations, and I don't see any reason why that won't continue or get better in the future. But regardless, it's a good thing for our fishery if we get a good rating on this. It's a good thing for the citizens of the region who are interested in not taking Chinook from the whales. And I think it's a great opportunity for the department too, because I took the liberty of sending the names of several staff people to this organization for context to talk about how we manage fish in Washington. I think the department gets very little opportunity to talk about the good job they do, and I think this is hopefully going to be a plus in that regard, and that it will give a chance for the public to understand that good management for all user groups with the eye towards recovery and stability for the future is what happens in all these fisheries. And so hopefully they will be contacting you about that, and that it will provide positive results for our fishery and for other fisheries in the state.
Thank you, Robert. Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the testimony. I had not heard about this dilemma nor this solution that you're working on. The question has to do with your characterization of how, I think you were saying that for Columbia River Chinook salmon, they have left the ocean, so they've left the opportunity for orca to have eaten any of them, and so it's non-consequential to the orca what happens after the fish swim across the Columbia River bar. But you mentioned that they were going to buy fish from Alaska. And it's my understanding that the bulk of the Alaska commercial catch is in the Alaska Southeast Troll Fishery, which is an interceptory fishery that takes maybe 50% of it is southern U.S. fish. So my question to you is, I couldn't quite make the logic on how the Alaska Chinook would be clean with regard to impacting orca feed, while Columbia River fish might not be.
Well, I mean, I made that same point to them, because that's exactly right. 50% of what's caught in southeast Alaska are lower state fish. 25% are BC fish. I think only 15% are actually Alaska fish in that troll fishery. And that was the argument I was making with them to try to point that out. But in reality, the public has a very poor understanding of this whole topic. I mean, I've been talking to my markets for years trying to explain how fishery management occurs. The last 7 years with this policy, I've really worked hard at that, and their eyes just glaze over. Frankly, they don't understand that the decision in this commission could remove local fish from the marketplace. They don't understand how that can happen. So the perception is that fish in the Columbia come out and live off our coast their whole lives and then come back in the Columbia. They don't realize they go up as far as the Bering Sea, or that they go down into Oregon and maybe even Northern California, and that each run spreads out to different areas. Different species go to different areas. The public does not understand that. And so that's what leads to these kind of things. And it's unfortunate for us. It's unfortunate for you, because that's the kind of struggle you face with trying to get this message across to the public.
Thank you, Robert. I hope you'll join us for the Fish Committee.
You can bet I'll be there. One last comment on this guide thing. I wish you wouldn't call it commercial fishing guide, because they aren't. They're recreational fishing guide. To me, this confuses what they do with our commercial industries, where we're allowed to sell fish. They're selling the guided trip, the experience. They aren't selling the fish. And I wish you'd just call it recreational fishing guide.
Well, talk to Butch Smith. He calls himself a commercial fisherman and guides out of El Waco. So anyway.
You can bet I'll call Butch
about
it.
You can bring it up at the Fish Committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. All right, we're going to move into number three, the